T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Good morning, and welcome to another edition of Better Living, a show about people and organizations making an impact around Dallas-Fort Worth. I'm your host, Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan. Thanks for joining us. And joining us right now, our very first guest is Mr. Brandon Board. He's with a company called the Community Storehouse. And I say a company, it's really a charitable organization. And you guys do so many wonderful things with low-income communities. Can you talk about the Community Storehouse?
Definitely. Community Storehouse is a nonprofit organization that we actually founded in 1982, and we support the students, their success in the classroom for Keller, Carroll, Northwest ISD, and actually as recently as this past Thursday, we just signed on to partner with Argyle ISD. So what we do is we take care of any problem that a student would find in the classroom that is outside of their control, meaning if they can't see the marker board to read it, mm-hmm. We work with optometrists. We have nutritional support. We have tutoring. We have summer educational programs for the students that, with the pandemic and in the normal world, that may have fallen behind for one reason or another that was outside of their control. So we have summer programs, and it's not just a regular summer program where you think the kids walk into a classroom and it feels like summer school. We actually have what's called Camp Community Storehouse. And we take all the fun stuff, magnify it, mm-hmm. and then focus on the education side. So, because last thing we want is any student to feel like they've maybe failed or they're in trouble, so they have to go to school over the summertime.
We're visiting with Brandon Board. He's the Director of Sales of Community Storehouse. Your website is absolutely awesome. It's at communitystorehouse.org. And I recommend anyone, any of our listeners, dropping by and taking a look and casually strolling through all the different pages on it. You guys have received rave reviews since the beginning. Whose idea was it to create this thing? And can you talk about some of the successes over the years?
So way back in 1982, the Metroplex was a totally different world than it is today.
Oh, yeah.
So we had two pastors at local churches here in the city of Keller, and three retired ladies that saw a need for food assistance. Mm-hmm. And what they decided to do was they opened just a run-of-the-mill, very small food pantry out of a garage. And as the community grew and the needs grew, the food pantry grew. In 2000, Barbara Board, our CEO, actually came on, and she was the first paid staff member in the history of the organization. And at that time, she decided that Community Storehouse needed to have a niche. A food pantry is what everybody needs, mm-hmm. a lot of the time, but what would put Community Storehouse on the map? And after meeting with the community and the school districts and the local officials, the determination that she was able to make was that there was no immediate support for any student in the Keller ISD school district that maybe had fallen behind or needed a little extra that mom and dad couldn't afford. So in 2001, Community Storehouse started partnering with Keller ISD. And when you hear words like Keller ISD, there are a lot of folks out there that know Keller Independent School District and know the area, the city of Keller. But what they don't realize is only 40% of the actual school district is in the city of Keller.
Really?
So 60%, correct, 60% of the school district is in other municipalities, such mm-hmm. as Fort Worth and things like that. So Keller actually touches seven municipalities. So there's a lot of little pockets that people don't know about that students are very easily slip through the cracks, because you hear things like, oh, Keller ISD, those are all, that's a really strong school district with, you know, big, huge houses.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't hear about the rural parts of the school district.
Exactly. Which, you reach into Tarrant County proper, and Tarrant County is a very large county.
Correct. So, and then in 2009, Northwest ISD actually came to Community Storehouse. And I don't know if you're familiar with this, but Northwest ISD is the landmass. It's the largest school district in the state of Texas.
Wow. Had no idea.
And so if you imagine, if you can think of, so our service area right now actually covers from, we touch four counties. We have Tarrant, Denton, Parker, and Johnson County, just a little on that last one. But just because of, you know, school districts aren't like counties. It's not a perfect square. They have a lot of zigs and zags. And one of the needs that people don't realize is, so Northwest ISD starts at basically I-35W and 170, but it goes forever.
Wow.
I don't know if you know, or if the world's familiar with Boyd and those kind of those small.
Oh yeah,
towns,
oh yeah.
It's a long way.
It's a long way.
Fort Worth.
What's wild. I love maps, and I'm always talking about the state of Texas and how large it is, and I kind of give people perspective. Now you just talked about, you know, the largest school district. Look at it like this. This is what I tell people how big Texas is. Lubbock is closer to Denver than it is to Corpus Christi.
Yes.
And Dallas-Fort Worth is closer to Shreveport than it is to El Paso. El Paso is closer to L.A. than it is to Texarkana. Texarkana is closer to Chicago. Is this not? To Chicago than it is to Laredo. Now, is that how big this state is or what?
It's nuts.
It could be three states if it wanted to be.
Well, and the cool thing about our state is not only do we have lots of landmass, but you can hit a desert, an ocean, a rainforest, and a prairie and never leave the state.
Yeah, never leave the state. That's a big, 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 big bunch of land. Again, we're talking with Brian Board. He is with Community Storehouse, and we're talking about what you guys do with low-income kids and communities. And I think it's important because you mentioned the food supplies, but talk a little bit how you got into the education and the summer programs a little bit more. Tell us the story a little bit more.
Okay, so what a lot of people don't realize is if I'm hungry and I'm sitting in my class, I'm more focused on what I'm going to eat for dinner or if I'm going to eat at dinner. I'm not necessarily able to focus on what my teacher is saying. So one of the programs that we do, it's called Snack Packs. It's a snack pack program. And we work with the counselors of the schools and the districts in which that we support. And they identify these students. And what they do is we supply, they're called low cook or no cook meals.
Mm-hmm.
So granola bars, Easy Mac, things that you might be able to pop into a microwave at most, because you never know what's at home. And the whole process in this is the counselors take the items from us and give them to the teachers. The teachers drop them in their backpacks when maybe they're taking a test or they're at a, you know, in PE or something like that, because we want to make sure that no student that needs our support is identified by their peers. Because
right.
That's a whole nother issue in itself. And then so what we do from there is we identify what the actual need of each individual student that qualifies for our services is. Do we need to have a one-on-one tutoring session? And one of the big issues that we've run into in the last 4 to 6 months, since more and more of the distance learning students have started to return to the classroom, is a lot of our younger males, they don't necessarily have an older brother or a solid figure that will just sit and talk to them and kind of, you know, they can bounce ideas and things like that. So we team up. Let's say we have Ryan who needs some math homework help. So Ryan our goal is to pair Ryan with an older male if that's what his requirement or his need is. And then so we have high school students and college students and even all the way up to retired folks that come in and tutor. And all they'll do is they'll talk Mass while talking about the Mavericks, while talking about the Rangers,
or right.
You know, just to be able to have a conversation that they may not be able to have without having the concern of, is somebody going to really pay attention to me? Well, the student is this volunteer's whole world for 60 minutes. We don't have cell phones and things like that in our tutoring sessions. So you get that social interaction that a lot of students have really done without if they were a distance learner for, you know, the better part of a year.
Yeah, you mentioned the pandemic and the distance learning. Can you talk about some of the challenges you guys face with the Community Storehouse just the past calendar year from 2020 through the beginning of 2021?
I'll be honest, I don't think we have enough time to talk about everything that we've had to deal with over the last year, but
well,
I will tell you.
Yeah, please tell us a couple of stories, because everyone can relate. That's one of the things about sharing or going through a crisis together. It actually brings communities together, and here in North Texas, everyone's had different challenges, and some of the stories are sometimes different and unique.
So one of the big things that we pride ourselves with at Community Storehouse is any time, whether it's a pandemic or a hurricane or a tornado, we do our best to pivot the best that we can. And one of the best things that we were able to do over the course of the last year and a half or so is, so we really were able to figure out the best way to support the community at today's needs, because the needs, they change all the time. So in the last, since March 1st of 2020, Community Storehouse has fed over almost 200,000 meals to almost 50,000 different people.
Wow.
So you can imagine the influx of the amount of food that we went through, because so just like everybody else, we were unable to have some of our programs go, our in-person programs go on in our buildings, because due to the pandemic we had to close. So we needed to pivot, because we wanted to make sure that no student fell further behind than they were already due to the fact of something that was outside of their control. So we worked with the school districts, and we had online tutoring. We had our educational staff, they built packets. So you were able to come through and you could grab a couple of days worth of worksheets that you would do normally in-house, take them home, and if your parents needed a little assistance, they were able to call us. And we had on-site counselors that were able to answer the phone and kind of walk you through a lesson so that you could take that and teach it to your student or your child that's at the house.
You know what? You know what's amazing is sometimes when people, you know, when they think about lower income families and children and supplying them with food and education, they think lower income, they think of big cities, and they think of lower incomes communities around these big cities. But when you're talking about rural areas, it's the same. It's the same application, but everybody in a rural area doesn't necessarily live on a farm. They may be low income, but they're also, you know, we're talking about, you know, just the economics of it all. So how are you able to reach so many people in rural areas that were low income during a pandemic when, as we all know, Wi-Fi had issues?
Yes, and I will tell you that.
Oh, boy.
You didn't hear about probably 40% of the rural area Wi-Fi issues. And actually, so one of the things that we did was one of the schools would contact us and say, we have got this student. However, we haven't been able to find them. We can't contact them. We know they don't have internet. And the school districts that we were working with are able to provide hotspots. However, you can't get a hotspot to somebody who you can't get a hold of.
Yeah.
So we had a few instances that our volunteers went and knocked on the door, and you know they took all the safety precautions. They'd knock on the door and then step back, and they would talk through doors and things like that. Just if nothing else, as a courtesy check to make sure there wasn't an additional issue going on. And then what we were able to do from that is we were able to get them in contact with the right folks that if they didn't have internet or they didn't necessarily have a working phone, because a lot of people don't realize that there are still areas in our districts that, you know, cell phone service is not awesome. And so we worked hand in hand. And we also worked with our school districts, because a lot of them, what they did was they built a hotspot on a campus. So if you had the ability to, you know, maybe go to a picnic table on a playground, you were able to, you could, if you had your school laptop, you could attach to the Wi-Fi. So you basically got to hang out at the park while you were doing your homework. Even with that, we still had huge internet problems and things like that. So there were, our education director actually pivoted once again, and she reached out to our districts and figured out some of the things that they were producing online. And we went old school and did paper copies.
There you go.
Handed them out to different people.
There you go. You've got to be creative. Like you said, you've got to pivot. You've got to adjust accordingly, and you have to never give up. I used to always say during the past calendar year, the healthcare workers were so great and so important, you know, the first responders, but I also threw in the educators because, you know, my kids were doing their schoolwork virtually all year long, and I know it has been a major challenge for educators to communicate with the kids and make sure they're paying attention. I consider that one of the greatest challenges of all time, seriously, educating our kids during this pandemic. And I was wondering about some of your educators and their volunteer services and how you were able to get them and help them make their way through this thing as well. Not just the families and the kids, but the people on your staff.
So I will tell you, as the spouse of a fifth grade math teacher, everything you just said is incredibly true. And I will tell you that there are a lot of people out there that go above and beyond in ways that I can't even imagine, because it's just not my wheelhouse. But my wife, you know, has stepped up and coming home and seeing her working late hours on Zoom because she had a student that was hung up. I totally get all that. And I hope the world understands that too, because I know that there's always, you know, some people who agree, some people who don't. But at the end of the day, the teacher signed up to be a teacher, mm-hmm. not necessarily an online teacher and all these other things.
Right.
But none of them stopped.
Yeah.
They all, you know, they pivoted how they had to.
Exactly.
And it's the same thing with our staff. I will tell you, as one of the members of leadership for Community Storehouse, I say this completely with all the truth in the world. I get the ability to have one of the best staffs anywhere. The staff that here at Community Storehouse, we have about a $4.6 million budget, and through the pandemic, we had 21 staff members, and of that, 7 of them were part-time. So you can imagine how many hours the full-time staff worked and things like that. But it was one of those things that as soon as we figured it out, we made a pivot and we were ready to go, Greg Abbott or the CDC or the president gave us a new directive and told us, you know, made a change. And mm-hmm. our staff, without missing a beat, they were there. They whether it was in our donation center or our resale store or our achievement center, the education process, everybody, they showed up. They had a smile on their face. We did. We all agreed at the very beginning that we weren't sure how it was going to go, how long it was going to take, but it wasn't about us. Anyone who comes to our building, we pride ourselves that all the photos across, we have kids' photos all over our buildings. And each one of those photos, they're our actual programs. So you can walk through at any time and see a little girl reading, a little boy in a playing in a gym with one of our PE coaches, you know, any of those things. And they're our actual programs. And sometimes, just like, you know, our staff is very human. Sometimes you got to stop and you got to just say, hey, this is what it's about. And we tell folks that our volunteers and our donors, the pictures are on the wall, but they're also on the wall for our staff. Because, you know, if you've given out 40 carloads worth of stuff and you are exhausted and you are running and gunning and then it snows and you lose power mm-hmm. and a water main breaks and we're all in here and we're cold and we're running, sometimes, and our CEO or Megan, one of the other leadership members, sometimes if we identify it, we'll have a staff and they'll go grab one of their favorite pictures and they'll just walk around the building. And it's a really cool motivational morale booster, because it kind of gets you to take a breath and it gets you to sit back and say, okay, we got this.
You know, I spend a lot of time speaking to kids in different schools and church groups and sports functions, and I'm always reminding, you know, kids, the difference between a job and a career is a job you're just getting paid. A career, you enjoy what you do. And I always remind them that their teachers, their educators, are not there because it's a job, because they're not getting paid enough. And this applies to everybody who's in a charitable organization as well and gives back to their community. They're not doing it because they're making like hundreds of thousands of dollars or millions or whatever. They're doing it because they care. They do it because they enjoy watching you succeed. I'm talking about the students or the people who the families that they're helping out. And so on that level, I give you guys a lot of credit, especially, you know, Community Storehouse, because you put in those long hours and you do those things that a lot of people would never do, and it has nothing to do with how much money you're earning. Can I also say this, because you brought it up? You mentioned the power outage situation. Oh, my goodness. I've heard so many stories. Please tell us, what was it like for Community Storehouse when the power outage happened that week in February? Because I know things were dicey, pipes bursting, and how you were able to pivot or survive that.
So everyone likes snow. Everybody likes the winter.
Oh, yeah.
Excuse me. So, you know, we hadn't really had one in 4 or 5 years. Mm-hmm. You know, it got cold and things like that. So you get prepared. We knew the snow was coming. And what ended up happening at Community Storehouse was, so all but one of our staff members lost power at home.
Oh,
so
no.
We were the different areas, because one of the issues that we ran into in our service area is where the boil mandates were happening, and then people actually lost, you know, water altogether. So one of the things that with Community Storehouse has been blessed with over the years is we have a lot of on-site water bottles and things like that. So once again, we did a pivot and we turned and we decided, hey, we've got water, we've got milk, we've got eggs, we've got food. If you need it, come get it. We'll have it until it's gone, kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so on day two of that, when the snow and everything, it finally stopped snowing, but that's when all the ice and things like that started happening, and water mains broke. We came into the building actually, and the power was out, which wasn't that big of a deal. But then we walked into our donation warehouse, which we found out was underwater.
Oh, wow.
Because we had a water main break on the back of our building. So we had 10 staff here at a time running and gunning, no water, no electricity. So things that people don't realize, when you don't have water, you can't flush a toilet. So you have staff and things running and gunning, and so they would run up to either our resale store location, which was closed but luckily didn't have an issue, or would run. Some of them live close, they would run home and things like that. But we were able to. It was one of those things that it was like the biblical story. I have 3 loaves of bread and fish, and mm-hmm. it fed an entire world. Mm-hmm. We were convinced that we were going to run out of water and milk, and somehow it just kept coming. And we were able to. We made it all the way. We had to turn away one car on the last day. And what we actually did was we had another location for them to go to get a case of water, because everybody was prepared for snow. Nobody was prepared for what the snow was going to do, including Community Storehouse. So we had to pivot and things like that. But just like everybody else, we had a water main break. We had no electricity. But the staff still showed up, because it's like you said, it's not about the paycheck that you get when you work for a place like Community Storehouse, because I can tell you that the people that work here and work under me, they could go and they could get paid a whole lot more doing probably a whole lot less if they wanted to. But the need and the mission statement that we have, everyone is bought into, and you have to be, because in order to be able to pivot as quickly as we have to sometimes, and to keep a smile on your face, because I'll tell you, at personal experience, there are times where you can walk in the door and you're just like, I need it to stop raining.
Yeah, just a break. We just need a small break. So you mentioned the challenge itself. And again, during that power outage, the scary thought about it was, when is the temperature going to warm up so that we can try to do anything, and when will the power be back? How were you able to get the pipes fixed? Could you talk about some of the partners or some of the volunteers who helped you get over that situation.
Definitely. So the power came back on eventually, and then so the water main broke on the Wednesday of that week. And so we were actually without water in our building until the following Wednesday. So we had what we call normal business days once the snow had kind of melted and things like that. But the issue was there were so many water main breaks that, you know, we basically needed to get on a list, you know, for a plumber and things like
that. Yeah, all over the area.
Oh, and so we finally got one of our longtime supporters was able to make a call, and I think he pretty much just – he got it to a point where he called in a lot of favors, and he knew an owner of a plumbing company, and they were able to come out. But I'll be honest, I was here until 11 o'clock that night because he wasn't able to get to me until 10:30. Granted, it was a quick fix because he knew what he was doing. Once we found the hole and things like that, so he got here between 9:30 and 10:30, and we were here till 11:30 that night, and I wasn't his last stop. And I will tell you that the company, they're called Leak Geeks. They're right here in the Keller-Fort Worth area. They are awesome, and I hope by now they've been able to take a nap.
So how much did that set you back? When I say how much, I'm not talking about dollars and cents. I'm talking about time, effort, catching up to what you're trying to do, which is, of course, provide some educational help and food supplies to some of these lower-income rural families in your area. How much did that set you back?
So actually, both on the physical and the financial side, just in the food areas, it was a heavy blow because everybody knows, so our coolers, they keep all of our produce and our protein, well, they were out for several days. So we were unable to, we gave out as much as we could before it started. We kind of got into that questionable rate, but once, what a lot of people don't realize is, hey, the power's on, the water's on, the problem's over. Well, it's really not, because since we ran out of so many things, it took us almost 4 full weeks to replenish back to where our normal operating hour or our
capacity
operating supplies.
Yeah.
And one of the crazy things is, so we give out about 40,000 pounds of food a week. So you can imagine, yeah, it's a lot. And that's in a normal situation. That's not with, you know, ice and snow and then people trying to catch up, because the crazy thing is we had some folks that showed up for water who they don't normally qualify for our services.
Mm-hmm.
They're not in a financial situation. They're able to, you know, do the tutoring and things like that.
But they're in crisis mode.
Right. And the look on their face was, I don't know what to do.
Right.
Okay.
Help me.
So, because we actually produced a video. We do a lot of in-house just advertising, and there's a video that that is out in the world on our Facebook page and things like that. And it's literally titled "We Got This," and it talks about if whatever you need, we understand. This might be your everyday life, or this may be the world just froze, and you don't have a clue. You are always welcome to call us. We will give you any and all information that we have, and we will support you in any way that we can, because we understand that you might have a $500,000 house. You might have really nice cars. You may have all these things, but you may lose your job, and you don't know what's going to happen, or you may not have water.
Exactly.
You can't even cook in your own house because you don't have water. So.
Well, we're so glad that you're there. You know what I mean? Community Storehouse, we're so glad that you're there. The summer's coming up. Where do you guys go from here this summer? And is it going to be different? Is it going to be more? What are the upcoming plans for a Community Storehouse?
So in 2020, it was weird because we had no summer educational programs for the first time. I've been here 11 and a half years, and that's the first time we haven't had it. So we really were kind of in a loss. So what we're able to do now that some of the mandates have been lifted, and the world engine, as we talk about it here in Community Storehouse, it's starting back up. We're starting to kind of get back to whatever the new normal is going to be. So starting 2 weeks from 2 weeks from Monday, we will have what's called Camp Community Storehouse. And as I talked to you about earlier, what we do is we take all the important things, math, reading, science, language arts, all of those things that the students have fallen behind in, and we make them fun. We bring it. It's not just that. We have Coach Fieldhouse, who is one of the PE teachers at one of the Keller schools, is probably, like, I'm jealous that I didn't have him as a PE teacher when I was in school. He gets on. I mean, he's in his early 40s, I think. And if he's listening, and I'm aging him out way bad, I apologize. I'm guessing. But he gets on the ground. I mean, they play dodgeball. Man, he is on it. He makes sure they have a blast.
He's like a Marvel superhero.
Oh my gosh! And he,
energy.
And one of the days they actually have Marvel. They have superhero day, and he does.
Wow.
He and his assistant, they dress up.
Wow, that's nice.
Yeah, every day that the students come, they get breakfast, they get lunch, they get a snack to take home. Because I will tell you, Chris, one of the worst things in the world, and this happens every year that we have a summer program, is you will walk through our lunch program, and the kids, they have any and everything. It's just a smorgasbord of whatever the donors that day have brought. And you see a student who might have a McDonald's cheeseburger, and he stops at the halfway point, and he rolls it up, and you look at him, and you say, "What are you doing?" "Well, my sister's at home, and I don't know if she has anything to eat."
Oh, man.
And I will tell you, just saying it, that on the back of the hair on the back of your neck stands up. So we don't just take care of the student that's in our program. We take care of everyone that's in that house. So they will get a snack. They will get, you know, some no-cook or low-cook food. And then, our staff is human. So when you hear those stories, that little one that made that statement, he might be getting Hershey bars. He might be getting
you never
any
know.
And everything you can think of, just because you're like, whoa, 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 that's not going to happen. And we test them at the beginning of the camp. We test them at the end of the camp. And for the last 2 years, so which would have been 2018 and 2019, it was the first year in 2018, and then we duplicated it in 19. We had a 100% increase on the education rate. We averaged somewhere around 95 to 99%, but every student reached their goal in 2018 and 2019. And Pat McKee, who is our achievement director, she's in charge of all of our programs. She's getting ready to retire. She works all of our summer programs, and she's getting ready to retire from Northwest ISD, and she's coming back now that we have camp coming back. And she's almost as much fun as Coach Fieldhouse. She is running and gunning. I mean, it's a lady I've known for a number of years. And, I mean, she's down there. She's on her knees playing the patty cakes and all these things because, like I said, in order to be a staff member at Community Trust, you really have to buy into the mission. And she bought into it. And she gets in because the thing is, like we said, we don't want kids to come thinking they're in trouble. I'm behind. I'm in trouble. Mom and Dad are mad at me. No. You're coming, and we're going to camp. And at camp, you're not even going to realize how much you learn and
exactly.
how close to where you need to be you're going to get.
Yeah, you might have been in a slump, but guess what? You're out of the slump. Now we're going to help you out.
Exactly.
Exactly. You know what? I cannot say this enough. I've really enjoyed this conversation, Brandon. Can you tell anybody who wants to either partner with you, be a volunteer, or might need your services how to get a hold of Community Storehouse? You can mention the website again, whatever you think anyone needs to hear.
So definitely. So on the supporting of the mission in the organization, we have three major events a year. We do. I don't know if you've ever heard of Clay Walker. He is our headliner at our
yes.
big concert that we do.
I was about to say the Clay Walker.
Yes.
Yeah. There you
guy.
Go. Okay.
Yeah. So we have a big event, and we're going to be in your backyard. So we've been at the Omni Hotel in downtown Fort Worth for the last number of years. And every 5 or 6 years we change it. So why not go to some, you know, we'll take Clay Walker and go hang out at Texas Live. We're
sure.
going to be at the Live Hotel.
There you go. Expand the footprint.
And it's, hey, I mean, football, baseball.
That's right.
Soccer a little bit. Why
right
not?
There in Arlington. Yeah, right next to Globe Life Field.
Yeah. So we will be down there on April the 9th of 2022. Yeah, because we're in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
And then we actually have a big 5K run that we do. It's called Run in the Dark, and that is in September. That's September 19th. And it's actually in – we're moving it because why not move all of our locations? We're moving that
hey.
To Roanoke. And we average – before the pandemic in 2019 was our 20th year. So for our 20th year, we had 6,200 people on site.
Wow.
And so we don't just do a 5K run. We do a big party and a big festival. We have a live concert. We're ending our event this year with fireworks. We have food trucks, vendors. You know, we have a festival with a 5K instead of a 5K where people just show up and leave. And then our other one is we actually are the historic Tarantula Train in Grapevine. We rent it out and we do an adults. Just a hangout, just kind of come ride on a train, because who doesn't like riding on a train?
Exactly.
And that'll be in the fall. And then if you are in need of our support, or if you would like to support any of those events or support Community Storehouse or know more, we would love for you to come out. We're all about, now the doors are open, we're able to give tours. We weren't able to meet and greet people for over a year. So
yes, sir.
CommunityStorehouse.org, you can find all of our information. But most importantly, if you are in the service area that we support and you need our support, 817-431-3340, communitystorehouse.org, or if you're in any of the school districts, contact your student's counselor. They know how to get a hold of us. And if you are not in those four school districts, still call us. We can hook you up with who is in the area of where you guys live. And we can send you to the right people for whatever it is. Because it's not just about the four school districts. Whoever needs the support, Community Storehouse is here. It may not come from us, but we will get you to where you can get it from.
Hey, Brandon, you are amazing, and so is Community Storehouse. Thanks again for joining us this morning. We will have you on again soon.
Thank you, sir.
All right. That is the great Brandon Broad from Community Storehouse here on Better Living. All right, everybody, just to pull the curtain back, I am so looking forward to our next guest, because my wife and kids and I, we are pet owners, and we have all kinds of pets. We've got a dog, we've got a cat, we've got a bearded dragon, we've got a tortoise, we've got all those things and more, and our next guest is all about the pets. And joining us now is Ed Jamieson, the new CEO of Operation Kindness, an organization providing assistance to animals in need of medical care, companionship, and most of all, a home. Hey, Ed, how you doing this morning?
Hey, I am doing great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Let me tell you something. We are so glad you are here to join us. And Operation Kindness has done so much great work over the years. Can you tell everybody what Operation Kindness is all about and how it first got started?
Yeah, it's I'm really honored to be a part of such a storied history agency. This is our 45th year in existence, and mm-hmm. It started from just animal lovers that were doing everything they could to help save as many animals as possible. Eventually ended up in a building in Carrollton, Texas. And in 2018, we started the beginning of a big capital campaign and a total refurbishing of the building here now. And we really have a state-of-the-art facility to help us accomplish the mission of just helping as many pets in need as possible. And I'm really, really thankful to have been selected to be the CEO to help lead during this exciting time.
Yes, you are the CEO now. And I want to talk about how you became involved, and I know you're passionate about it. They would have never brought you in as the CEO. Could you talk about your background as well?
I come from Northeast Ohio. I was born and raised, actually same high school as our friend LeBron James.
Look out!
St. Vincent, St. Mary.
Yeah.
And got into animal control in the early 2000s in a suburb of Cleveland, Ohio. I became the chief animal control officer for the city of Cleveland in 2014. Really, the great, passionate animal lovers in Cleveland. We did some great things there. When Dallas made a big commitment to their animal services and doing right by the animals in Dallas, I became the director for the city of Dallas Animal Services in 2017. And it had just become a standalone department, so I was the first director for Dallas Animal Services. And what many don't realize about Dallas Animal Services is that we had the third highest dog and cat intake in the entire country in 2019.
Wow.
So just under 40,000 dogs and cats came through our system. So I fell in love immediately with North Texas. I love the passion for animals, and it's very hard, emotional, really, really tiring work just with the volumes of animals that we see here. And Operation Kindness was a partner of Dallas Animal Services. And that's when I got to know the people, the organization. And then when COVID happened, I had gotten pretty close with the CEO, Bob. He's a terrific guy, not from the animal world, but really helping see them through construction and the pandemic. We started meeting regularly, just talking about what's happening in the animal world, how are we able to help each other through those tough times. And once construction was done here, he said that he was retiring. And one thing led to another with me meeting with the board, and they offered me the position. And I couldn't be happier that this is where I'm at right now.
So can you tell us how you are able to receive some of the pets, some of the animals? We mentioned the medical care and the companionship and the possibility that sometimes people can adopt or show them a home. Can you talk about how you receive the animals?
Yeah, we have a couple of different ways. We are not a stray facility, so we're not able to take in strays. But
okay.
When I started here, we had about 41 area partners, which are mostly government shelters, open admission shelters, that we just would work really hard to try to help them with the animals that they had in their care that they needed help with. We will take owner surrenders. We are working real hard on trying to get resources to people so they don't have to surrender their animals. But the majority of what has come into our facility has always historically and probably will remain working with our area partners on anything that we can do to help them so that we can just help with the life-saving gap that's in Texas. And with the new facility, my main focus is this amazing medical facility that we have that was really funded by the Reese Jones Foundation, was the main funder for our medical wing. And we're doing everything we can to get animals that need medical care that we can. Me coming from the government side, I know that, you know, resources are very, very limited. And if there's something that we can specialize in, sick, injured, it's kitten season right now. So we have a ton of little itty bitty kittens.
Now you say kitten season. Explain for those who don't know, what does kitten season mean?
Oh, yes. Well, in springtime, everywhere in the country is when kittens are born. And in Texas, because we don't have much of a winter, it's kitten season most of the year. But yeah, really March kind of is the kickoff to that there are just a lot of stray kittens born. And most people don't realize that nationally, kittens are two times more likely to die in a shelter than a dog is.
Wow.
So that is a big focus of ours to just the health-wise, that when kittens are without their mother, their chances really, really decrease. So that's a big focus of ours, that, hey, if we're able to give them the support that they need, in 6 to 8 weeks, they are going to be perfectly adoptable, healthy, happy kittens to go into somebody's home. But it takes a lot of work in those early stages for kittens.
You know, let's stick with the cats and the kittens for just a little bit here, because I'm actually allergic to cats, but I actually really like cats, and we actually have a cat. But this is what I learned. I didn't become allergic to cats until like later on in my life. But I used to live in the uptown area of Dallas, and there were stray cats around. And a lot of people were like, wow, look at all these stray cats. Now, I found out something rather interesting, and you can confirm this because this is what you do. Someone said it's okay to have a few here and there, because if you have some stray cats around in your neighborhood, you may not have that many rats and mice.
That is not an incorrect statement. Really good council member in City of Dallas, Council Member Atkins in South
Tanel
Dallas.
Tanel Atkins, yeah. He's a buddy.
Yep, we were talking at a community meeting, and we were talking about cats, and we were talking about the efforts to do TNR, is trap, neuter, return, which is the animals get picked up, you sterilize them, give them vaccines, then you return them back to their neighborhood.
Right.
And met many governments that is the program that they have. He was very much in favor of that, and he had just said that if you don't got cats, you got rats.
Right. You pick your choice. I mean, I think most people would prefer to see a few cats here and there as opposed to rats all over the neighborhood.
You're absolutely spot on, and that's why getting them sterilized, because they do reproduce so quickly. And you know, before you know it, two cats can turn into 22 cats really, really quickly. So every municipality has different rules and regulations, but most are working on the TNR programs to be able to get those animals in, get them altered, and then bring them back to the community. And you know, many of those cats, we were to refer to them as community cats. You know, they go to Mrs. Jones's house in the morning.
Right.
And they get dry food left out.
They make their rounds.
Miss in the afternoon because she's going to put a little can of wet food out. So the community is caring for those cats. And like you said, most people are tolerant if those numbers remain, you know, not multiplying. And they really become part of the community, and everybody really likes them.
We're talking with Ed Jamieson. He's the new CEO of Operation Kindness. Now, you were mentioning the animal hospital that you have and some of the pets that you take in. We were talking about some dogs and puppies, and you said owner release or owner?
Owner surrender.
Owner surrender. Okay, I'm going to bring this up because we also have a dog. And before we found our cute little puppy, I was talking to a couple of different rescue operations, and they were talking about how a lot of people get dogs and puppies for their families around Christmas time, and then they wind up not being able to take care of them in January. Is that the time of the year? Is that like the season that unfortunately a lot of families have to surrender their pets?
Actually, that is an inaccurate fact.
Okay, help me.
Data actually shows that in a lot of this animal world, what we think would happen isn't necessarily what happens. National statistics actually show there's a higher percentage of the animal staying with the person because of the extra bond when it is given as a gift. As long as the person is aware that this was going to happen, they might not have known it was going to happen on their birthday or Christmas or whatever special event. The extra attachment, hey, my parents got me this because I'm now an adult or whatever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers our animals given as pets are actually less likely to be returned to the shelter. So that's one of those myths out there that we would think it might be this or that black cats shouldn't be adopted at Halloween time because there's more instances of animal cruelty. That's just not accurate. That's a myth. And when we actually start to look at the data, turns out to not be accurate.
So this is like a year-round thing. It can happens randomly. There's no like, oh, this is the time of the year, unfortunately, that people, you know, either give up their pets or let them go.
Nope, you're actually, you know, you're correct on that. That the number one reason for owner relinquishment of a pet has to do with housing issues.
Mm-hmm.
And so those housing issues that, hey, I'm moving and I didn't realize the place that I was going to, the restrictions that I couldn't keep the pets, or there's a really high pet deposit, and so they're not able to go. So the number one reason is pet restrictions. And so we are trying to put a lot of efforts, as well as many of our partners, on how can you help people with the resources to be able to keep their pet? Because most people have a bond with their animal. It's a family member.
Yes.
And it's very, very difficult when they do have to relinquish it. So we find that the kind of the better bang for the buck and to really get to the root cause is there anything that we can do that can help you keep the pet and not have to surrender it?
You know, you mentioned the bond. I think a lot of people found out during the pandemic that they form significant bonds with their pets. And actually, I found out that a lot of elderly people found a lot of comfort with pets. And those are not just like, you know, if someone lost their sight and they have an animal that helps them with their sight, they're animals there for comfort and psychological reasons as well.
Absolutely. And I think even the other end of the spectrum, I think a lot of school-age children who weren't able to have the social contact throughout this COVID,
yes,
their pet was the thing that was able to keep them going. So, yeah, pets are companions. They're called companion animals for a reason. They bring so much comfort. And again, most people look at their pet as a family member, and that's we're really, really trying to focus on that here at Operation Kindness, is anything we can do to either help create a new bond with a new animal or that we're able to assist so that you can keep the bond you already have with your existing pet, that's really the way to go, because it's so important for everybody having that comfort, having that companionship. And I think we can all think of stories throughout our lifetime that our dog, our cat, whatever it might be, helped get us through a really rough patch in our life, because the animals, they don't care. They're there for you.
Yes, they are. They are so loyal.
Really important.
They are so loyal. Now, you mentioned the hospital. I want to circle back to the hospital again, because you take care of a lot of pets, a lot of animals that you pick up or you're able to receive. Can you talk about some of the varieties of injuries, or is there a couple of types that are consistent that you guys handle?
Yes. You know, being in the South, canine parvo is really prevalent. And again, coming from the government world, where you have open admission, you're thinking about herd health and some of these contagious diseases like parvo that can spread rapidly through a shelter. We have isolation rooms mm-hmm. for all of these. So I'm actually sending out this morning a survey to all of our partners asking them, what is your, you know, your highest needs? And I'm expecting that parvo is going to be one of those.
Can you talk about the symptoms of that? Because a lot of people don't know the symptoms.
Correct. And if you're from the animal world, it's very, very distinctive. It's the animal gets lethargic, and it's usually bloody stool, and then there's a very distinctive parvo smell.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's with puppies. It can be in older dogs and typically unvaccinated dogs. It's very easy to not let your animal get it simply by having vaccines. But, yeah, bloody stool is the telltale sign that, uh-oh, there might be something here. We are able to treat that, have a very high success rate in that. And that's one of the areas that we're going to really target with our partners and the public that, hey, parvo is something that we can treat. Doesn't have to be a death sentence. We can help fix that up and, you know, make sure that that puppy is able to have a wonderful life. Cats, it's ringworm. It's mm-hmm. something, it freaks everybody out. It's really, it's a fungus. It sounds worse than it is. It's kind of like athlete's foot. And oftentimes, you don't know until the cat gets a little bit older and you start seeing little patches on it. That's something we can treat also, again, because our hospital has a multitude of isolation rooms that we can treat these specialty diseases. They're contagious but treatable, and that's what our focus really is here at Operation Kindness.
How many animals do you have at Operation Kindness, generally speaking, overall, you know, from a day-to-day, week-to-week kind of basis? How many can you handle?
You asked that because I had a board meeting last night, so I was really looking through all of our numbers. So our facility can hold about 160 animals for adoption. I'm sorry, 120 animals for adoption at any given time. Mm-hmm. And then our medical is another additional 120. So that's, I'm going to say only with air quotes, that's only 240, but we have about 440 animals in our system. So between our foster care, we have great partnership with Pet Supplies Plus that adopts cats out for us. So yeah, we have about 440 animals in our system right now, and every day we are looking to maximize our capacity so that we can help the highest number of animals.
Can you talk about how, can you tell us about the process of how someone might want to come to Operation Kindness and maybe meet a pet, or how that process works where you're able to place a pet in a home?
Absolutely. And we're coming out of the COVID world that we've been in over the last year.
Let's call it a pivot.
Yes, exactly. We're doing in-person by appointment right now. And it all starts at operationkindness.org through our website is the easiest way. You can scroll the animals that are currently available for adoption. Real easy, one click to start the process to set up an appointment. We are hoping here in the very soon upcoming weeks that we're going to get back to people don't have to make appointment. But even with that, I still point people to the website because you can see the animals that are available. And it's operationkindness.org. Starts it all. We have an amazing client services team that will talk you through any questions. They love these animals. They love the people that we are hoping to match with an animal. And that starts the conversation is right through operationkindness.org.
Can you talk about your staff, the size of the staff, and anyone that would like to either volunteer or maybe work with you? Because there's a lot of people who absolutely love pets, love animals, and maybe have either veterinarian degrees or veterinary skills.
Yes, well, staff, we have just under 70 staff currently.
Nice.
We're looking to add potentially 20 more staff or so, depending on how things look through our budget cycle. Because the building was just expanded on. We added about 20,000 square feet to our total footprint, inside footprint here in Carrollton. And so we're going to have positions coming up, and that's from all ranges, from the medical veterinary side, vet techs, to kennel techs, to our client services. Volunteers make any animal shelter go round. We have a very, very robust volunteer program. That even with that, we're always looking to add to. They're on a scheduled during time slots right now as well, so they were really itching to get back. Just the last couple of weeks is when we started having them back in the building. But there's a lot of ways to be involved, and the reality is that we are a nonprofit organization, so all of our funding comes from donations. 100% of our ours, it comes from donations. So we are trying to improve. We're trying to fill out this new building that we're in. So any donations, large or small, are always greatly appreciated.
You know, a lot of people listen to the show on all the different stations that carry it. And I'm sure you've got some partners already. You want to shout out any partners or talk about how if anyone might want to be a partner, let alone, you know, donate?
Well, I always love shouting out people because this animal world, you can't work in a silo. There's way too many animals in Texas to be in a silo. I, you know, am really happy for the first time in my career to be on the nonprofit side, to be a little more nimble, to be able to react when people need help. But my government shelter is out there. They're fighting the fight. They're open admission. So literally any animal that comes to their door, they have to take in. A huge shout out to all of them. There's a lot of national organizations that are giving a lot of attention to Texas. Just in 2018, Texas had the highest number of animals euthanized in the country.
Oh, no.
That changed. We were no longer in last place. Still towards the bottom, but we're working very, very, very hard on that. So organizations like Petco Love, PetSmart Charities, Pet Supplies Plus, Best Friends Animal Society, Humane Society of the United States, they all are extremely interested in Texas. Their business is loving animals. And there's just so many organizations out there that are doing the work every single day. It's a 7-day-a-week, 365-day type of situation that we're in. And a lot of people are working really hard for the animals.
You know, you mentioned the pandemic, and you mentioned, okay, things are opening up a little bit, and you're able to allow people to have greater access to the animals. Can you talk about how tough it was this past calendar year? And I even didn't even bring up what happened in February, that week where everybody lost their power. Did you guys have any drama that week? Some people had power, not just power outage, but they had pipes bursting. And I know that if you had any kind of situation, it might have affected caring for the animals.
Yes. Well, so we'll talk about Snowvid, as we're referring to it.
Snowvid, yes. Very good.
We did have some pipes that burst. That was really, really you know, frustrating. A beautiful new building, and to have pipes burst. But it is what it is. Things happen. It's funny. Since I've been in Texas, I've heard 100-year storms and 100-year situations way more than I thought I would. I think I've heard that two or three times already just in the last couple of months. But, yeah, we did have pipes burst. Luckily, they were in office area, so the animals weren't affected at all. And that was something that, because this animal community here in North Texas is pretty tight, everybody was in communication with each other. That does anybody need help? Does anybody need anything? So, you know, I think we made it through that and learned some valuable lessons. COVID was really hard for the animal world as a whole, but we were pleasantly surprised at the response. I can recall March 12th of 2020, I was standing in the parking lot of Operation Kindness for the grand opening of the medical side. I was still the director of Dallas Animal Services at that time. March 13th, we all were panicking and putting out pleas to the public. And then a week later, all of us had our doors shut, but it had put out pleas for fosters, adopters, and most everybody was able to greatly decrease the number of animals in their shelters because we just didn't know what was going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It did show us that there's virtual components that every animal shelter is going to keep moving forward that they may not have had before COVID. But I think probably the biggest thing with COVID that we learned is that the communities care about animals. And if you're open and honest and transparent with your ask of the public, most of the time they will respond. They may or may not like every person, but they certainly like the animals and will do anything they can to help the animal.
Yes, they do. Is there anything coming up this summer with Operation Kindness that you want to let everybody know about?
Oh, boy. Well, I wish I could say an official date, but we are going to finally have a real grand opening because our building got completed during COVID. So we haven't been able to have the full-fledged grand opening. I want to say that'll be in early July to have a full-fledged so that everybody can come out and really see this absolutely beautiful property that we have. Our biggest fundraiser will be in November, which we will be pushing that out. It's a yearly thing, and we are planning on doing that in person. It's been virtual, you know, the last year. So, and there'll be a lot of community events as we're able to get out, you know, now that things are starting to ease up with COVID. I'm really big that even though we have this beautiful facility, we want to meet people where they're at. We want to help them with resources to keep their pets. So look for Operation Kindness. That yes, we have a beautiful facility, and we're going to be inviting people to come to see that, but that also keep your eyes out because we're going to try to get to your neighborhood for whatever type of needs we're able to help fill.
Ed, you guys are absolutely awesome, and I can't thank you enough for joining us. We will have to have you back on again so we can catch up with what's going on with the latest and the greatest of Operation Kindness.
Hey, I really, really appreciate the time. I know that the staff and our board appreciates the time, and most importantly, the animals really appreciate you bringing attention to them.
Exactly. Ed Jamison, the new CEO, congratulations again, of Operation Kindness. You can catch up with them at OperationKindness.org. It's an organization providing assistance to animals in need of medical care, companionship, and most of all, a home. We can't thank you enough for listening in again every week as you do here on Better Living. I'm Chris Arnold of 105.3 The Fan, and I can't thank you all enough for joining us. Tune in next week as we focus on other organizations doing great things in our community right here on Better Living.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.